This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me Dr. Jill Stein, who's running for president as a Green on the Green Party ticket. Dr. Stein, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you so much, Matt. Great to be here.
Now, have you already been nominated? Has that process happened, or are you the only person running? What's going on there?
I'm the only active campaign. There are a couple of other candidates for the record, but none of them are actually active.
Okay.
So it's pretty clear that my campaign is carrying the message of the Green Party forward in this race.
And why are you running for president as a Green?
Most recently, it became clear with the debt ceiling debacle that there really needed to be a voice of opposition in this presidential race. And I was not by any means intending to be a national candidate. I'm pretty focused on state politics and grassroots politics in Massachusetts. But, you know, at that time, it became really clear with Medicare and Social Security being put on the chopping block by the president that there really needed to be a voice of opposition. I became active in the party's efforts to see that we're going to, you know, provide that opposition candidate, which otherwise will not be in the race. So as we began to search, it became clear that the party needed a campaign team that could actually ramp up from the state level. And we've run several times at the state level and have had very exciting and impactful campaigns, and we were willing to serve the cause.
It's kind of an imposing task, though, to take on, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I was somewhat quaking in my boots at the thought, but I have to say it has been the most exciting and really fun campaign that I have ever been a part of. This is my fifth campaign, and all of them have been undertaken for specific purposes, and they've all been very difficult. They've been, you know, really difficult, but I think important battles to fight. I assumed this one would be far more difficult and more painful, and actually it's exactly the opposite. There's such a profound felt need out there generally for an alternative politics that it's like giving out candy at Christmas to kids. Just one day after the next, it's been a really exciting series of connections with people who are really hurting for a political voice and who are waking up to the reality that ordinary people have really been betrayed by both corporate political parties.
Well, let's talk about your critique then of the Democratic Party or of President Obama. Where do you think he's gone wrong, and has he done nothing good?
I wouldn't say he hasn't done anything good, but, you know, I think there's widespread and profound disappointment that this president has not lived up to his promises, to say the least. And, you know, from his very first days in the White House when he brought in Larry Summers and Tim Geithner and, you know, William Daley and then Jeffrey Immelt, you know, he has brought in the Goldman Sachs fraternity. The White House is occupied by Wall Street, and the president's agenda has very much advanced the interests of Wall Street, starting from, you know, Obama's support for the Wall Street bailouts, for the expanding war. The withdrawal from Iraq was a timetable set by President Bush. President Obama would have extended their stay had he been able to, you know, maintain the immunity that he sought for U.S. soldiers, which they have lost because of the terrible things that have happened under our watch in Iraq. His expansion of the drone wars, the incursions into Pakistan, the new war for oil that he has opened up in Africa. I mean, it's just shocking what's going on the peace front, you know, just on down the line, issue after issue on civil liberties. I mean, there's another issue that, you know, we could spend hours talking about, you know, how the president has abandoned hopes, not only for closing Guantanamo, but he has really brought the battlefield home specifically with the Defense Authorization Bill. He's really dissolved the distinction between the military and Homeland Security. And, you know, it's just what is happening really demands a response. This is not safe, and it is not in anybody's interest to sit back and let this president and the Democratic Party, you know, continue to take us in the direction that they're going. And if I can just float one image here at the start, you know, you can think of the Republican Party as a ship that's taking us down really quick, and the Democratic ship might be thought of as sinking slightly less slowly, you know, but who in their right mind would think that the solution to a sinking ship is to get off and get into another one that's also going down, even if, you know, even if the timetable for disaster might be a little bit further off. You know, we really need a politics of integrity that is not bought and sold by Wall Street, and that can really implement the solutions for which there is enormous public support. It doesn't take rocket science to figure out, you know, how to transform our economy into the green economy that will put a stop to climate change at the same time that we put an end to unemployment. You know, we can do all of this and improve our health while we're at it, you know, and move to a single-payer healthcare system, Medicare for all, that will save us money at the same time that it truly meets our healthcare needs. So, you know, to my mind, it would be just an outrage to allow the Democrats to continue selling us down the stream.
I'm speaking with Dr. Jill Stein. She's running for president on the Green Party ticket. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. This is Progressive Radio that you're listening to. You know, you make a very persuasive critique of President Obama, and I share just about every little bit of that. The question is, though, what is the effective response, and will the Green Party have an effective response? Should there be a challenge within the Democratic Party? Would that do anything? I mean, it looks like Obama's going to get the nomination no matter what, and there is an argument for running within the Democratic Party just to raise issues. But the Green Party, when I just wonder, first of all, how many ballots are you going to be on, and what, you know, sure. Ralph Nader, when he ran, who has, you know, a huge name in this country, got only 2.7% or something like that. And then subsequent Green Party candidates got a lot less. At some point, on some level, it looks like, well, you're right on the substance. What's going to come of it, and what's the use?
Exactly. You know, and I think that is the question of the hour. You know, and if an effort is not made, it's clear what direction we're going in. You know, the trajectory that we're on within this two-party corporate system, it's clear the solution is only getting farther away. And good people made efforts to mount opposition campaigns and a debate within the Democratic Party, and it's just not going to happen. So it's not a question of whether or not it should. That could be debated, but, you know, would it be strategic to do that? But as a practical matter, it's just not in the cards. You know, so that's why it really does, I think, underscore that the time has really arrived to launch a third party now that the Democratic Party is so moribund that there is no prospect of debate or salvage from within. So I think, you know, we just close the door on that discussion now and we move on. And, you know, we are not moving on, I think, because people are choosing to. Although some are, but it's become a necessity, you know. And in the same way that, a lot of people went and camped out under very uncomfortable circumstances as part of the Occupy movement, you know, there are real drivers here now which are not discretionary. You know, people don't have jobs. They're losing their homes by the millions. They cannot afford to go to college. You know, some 30 million college students and recent graduates are up to their eyeballs in debt, have no prospects really for anything but being indentured servants for the rest of their productive lives. You know, what people are facing now is absolutely outrageous. So the terms of engagement are totally different. And that's why, you know, I think that's why suddenly many of us within the Green Party have focused on a national race. I have never personally wanted to even be involved in national races. It just seemed so far away and the issues were so ambiguous, it was hard to really make the case. Right now, we find we don't have to make the case. So, you know, as a matter of galvanizing public support, the support is already there. It's a question of how we focus it. Fortunately, the Green Party, to its credit, has seen this coming. You know, we have been fighting to establish a politics of integrity for a long time. So we have a national organization. We have ballot status already in about 16 or 17 states, and those include the most populous and most difficult states to acquire ballot status. So we already have a very large proportion of the population that's already, you know, within our purvey. And we have existing parties and dormant parties that are reviving in the moment. It's been very hard to fight City Hall, you know, with all the money and firepower and all the forces of repression that have really clamped down on open political dialogue. It's been very hard for opposition parties. And it's to the credit of the Greens, I think, that we have been a survivor. That we have managed to stick around as a national force with access to the ballot when the Progressive Party, the New Party, the Labor Party, you know, the Socialist Party as an electoral force, they've all been forced off the political map. The Greens have managed to hang on, and so that's where we start to rebuild a real fight. And my expectation is that we will be on the ballot in at least 40 states, maybe 45. There are a lot of people who are coming out of the woodwork now, whatever their political background, because they see that the Greens are the one organized force for a progressive voice in this election and moving on into the future. So the terms of party building now have suddenly shifted to really make this possible at a time when we desperately need it.
What would success be then for this campaign?
You know, that's a discussion, you know, that is very much underway now. And, you know, some would say maybe it's 5 million votes, maybe it's 10 million votes. In my mind, whether we're 2% or 52%, and I say this as a candidate, you know, who has refused to shut up and go away, although I've been told to do that many times. You know, I think it's very convenient for the powers that be to, you know, to wage those fear campaigns and those smear campaigns. But democracy has been really well served, I would say, in Massachusetts by the fact that we have run as Greens and we have really built an opposition force to where now we are, you know, we used to run 5 and 10% of the vote. Now in our local races and our legislative races, we're regularly coming in at 35 to 49% of the vote. And this isn't just in Massachusetts. So we are building an opposition party. In my view, as a candidate this time around, whether it's 2% or 52%, it's a very rigged system. So simply looking at vote counts doesn't begin to, you know, really tell you what the value of this is. To my mind, the experience of having built an opposition force that begins to hold power accountable and that can be there as the old paradigm continues to fall apart, which it is doing, it will continue to do. We need to keep pushing that alternative agenda for the peaceful, just, green future. We need to keep that discussion active, those solutions on the table, and keep building support for them.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Dr. Jill Stein, who's running for president on the Green Party ticket. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. How is the system rigged against third parties?
Oh, in so many ways. I mean, first, the money, you know, pouring in makes it almost impossible to compete. In gubernatorial debates in Massachusetts, I was told I had to raise $100,000, you know, in order to be admitted. You know, it's like it's very explicit. Money, you know, isn't just equal to free speech. Free speech is now, you know, it has become money. For political speech has, you know, now has a price tag associated with it. And so that really shuts out any kind of, you know, political voice that is not bought and paid for by Wall Street or corporate America. So that is sort of the overarching context. But in addition, you know, access to the ballot is, you know, made increasingly difficult as petition requirements are raised higher and higher to where, you know, it becomes almost impossible for volunteer grassroots efforts to have a word in edgewise in our democracy. You know, the censoring by big media, you know, they won't, you know, it's rare that they will allow you in the door and to have access to the microphone. So, you know, in just virtually all ways, the system is tilted towards
money.
Well,
if you don't
have
access to the microphone, how are you going to communicate your message in this campaign?
You know, look at Egypt or Tunisia. You know, I'd say the possibilities, the roof has been blown off the off the top, you know, of what's possible now. The internet, Facebook, social communications have really revolutionized politics and national level politics in a way that has not yet been explored. Barack Obama certainly ran an internet campaign, but while we still have access to it, you know, it has advanced a whole lot in the last 4 years. And there's so much that can be done now, and I think our campaign will be testing the limits of that.
What do you do with the spoiler question that always comes up? You know, you're going to be helping to elect Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich, and they're going to do something much worse than Obama would do. You know, they will take the right to choose away from women, and they'll put all
Well, which is kind of, you know, being taken away right now. Sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
That's the basic question.
Yeah, I mean, the politics of fear, you know, which has reigned supreme over the last 8 years, has brought us to everything we were afraid of. You know, from the massively expanding war, the bailouts, you know, more free trade agreements, you know, pushback on women's reproductive rights, you know, the Wall Street bailouts, you know, the power reigns supreme in the banks, and we're, you know, forever on the precipice of the next big crash, which is going to be bigger than the worst ones, and the banks have not been downsized, and the problems haven't been fixed at all. And Obama's embracing, you know, everything, all of our worst fears about George Bush. He's either embraced or extended. So that argument just doesn't stand the test of time. We have essentially learned that silence is not an effective political strategy. It's not easy. You know, there's a difficult road ahead here, whether we simply continue on our current trajectory, which is, you know, the path of devastation. We're on the climate cliff right now, for example, and the economic cliff, and, you know, the healthcare cliff, the education, you name it. Things have gone from bad to worse, and they're about to spin out of control. But to my mind, the question is, do we bring democracy back in here? You know, and if we absent ourselves, and by we, I mean those who are not sponsored by corporate America and Wall Street, the public interest, if we absent ourselves, the progressive movement, if we disappear ourselves politically, we're going to get more of the same. The question is whether we engage the fight. We've got to do that. Then other things become possible. If we don't at least engage the fight, it's all over. You know, move to another planet because this one is not going to survive. So, you know, to my mind, there's just no question. When you talk about spoiling, in the eyes of most people, what's being spoiled is their healthcare, their education, et cetera. They're not worried about spoiling some politician's political career. You know, this is about reclaiming our lives. And, you know, when you're out there talking to young people who really are the ones who are paying the price, they are paying the supreme price for our generational injustice, which now reigns supreme by way of unemployment, education, the collapse of the education system, and climate, you know, the outrages that are being perpetrated against the climate. It is young people who are going to live with the consequences. And you ask them, in their view, you know, things are pretty well spoiled the way that they are now. We've got to engage the fight to get out of here. And if I can just relay one quick story, we launched our campaign at Western Illinois University. I received a phone call a couple months back from a young woman who introduced herself to me as my campaign manager for the university. And she said, "Won't you come down here? We're having a mock election." And they go through a whole lot of the details of the election, including an electoral college. They hold conventions for the five parties, including the three, you know, minor parties. And so how could I say no to that? You know, so I did go down. We were running at about 3% using sort of surrogate indicators. We were at about 3% among the student body. I gave a 6-minute speech advancing our agenda, which is extremely friendly to the younger generation and other living things. And we came out with 27% of the vote, which made it a real three-way. We were 5 points behind Romney and only 12 points behind Barack Obama right there in his backyard at a college that has never been green, that has never been progressive or lefty. You know, our agenda is really the public's agenda, which is otherwise missing in action here. So if that could be done with a 6-minute speech, you know, just imagine what would happen if we had a real debate going forward. Even if it's happening under the radar and on social media and on the internet, we could have a real uprising for democracy and justice. And in my view, that is the win here that we're really going for, is to consolidate and launch and give political voice to that movement that is alive and well and bursting out all over the place, that Wisconsin has had so much to do with in getting us launched. That movement is alive and well, and it needs to have a political voice.
Speaking with Dr. Jill Stein, who's running for president on the Green Party ticket, this is Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. So you're going to go to a lot of campuses, I assume.
Yes, and have been, and it is wonderful being at campuses. It's so exciting to see students, kind of have the moment of revelation, or a moment, I should say, of empowerment, where they feel like they're not being written off and they're not the last priority.
One of the things that surprises me about some college age students is the popularity of Ron Paul. I mean, part of it may be the legalization of marijuana or the ending of the drug war, but what do you make of his appeal to young people?
Absolutely. And when young people find out about our campaign, it's like, you know, it's like they realize, oh, you know, because we're also talking about making, I mean, all those things that you just mentioned. And in addition, we talk about making public higher education tuition free as well, that a higher education degree today is what a high school degree was yesterday, and it should be an education right. So, you know, we find people in Ron Paul's camp very quickly coming into our camp, or other Ron Paul supporters saying, well, when he loses, the Republican nomination will be in your court. There's a lot of overlap. And while there may be, you know, and among students in particular, I think that the war, civil liberties, the Wall Street bailouts, those are really important, and they tend to trump small differences. But when they learn that there is a race that also supports their views on social issues, then they are totally in our camp.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've spent many, many years in Massachusetts and have been a Green on the ballot in Massachusetts, so you must have overlapped there with Mitt Romney's governorship. What is your assessment or view of Mitt Romney? What's he like?
Indistinguishable from Deval Patrick. You know, in a word, when the baton passed from one to the other, you could not tell the difference other than, you know, certain superficial appearances. But aside from that, many members of Romney's cabinet remained Deval Patrick's. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, what Barack Obama, you know, did when he took office. And he kept on, you know, Gates, the Defense Department, you know, head under George Bush. Same thing in Massachusetts, that heads of critical agencies were kept in place. There were really no major policy differences between the two, and it made so crystal clear. And in fact, my opponent in the last gubernatorial race, Baker, who was the Republican candidate, had been, get this, if you can wrap your head around it, in Deval Patrick's first run for governor, Charlie Baker was Deval Patrick's first choice for his lieutenant governor. So that alone speaks volumes about what are the differences between these guys. And Massachusetts, you know, has made it particularly evident because it's a Democrat-only state. It is wall-to-wall Democrats. All the houses of our legislature and the executives, you know, are all Democrats, yet we have the same problems in Massachusetts, the same war on workers, the same unbearable, you know, disparities, economic disparities, problems in our education system. Teachers are under attack and being scapegoated. You know, the embrace of this, ridiculous education policies of, you know, test and testing reigns supreme and forget the whole child, et cetera. You know, Massachusetts is leading the charge. And even in a complete Democratic administration, the Democratic agenda was basically abandoned.
So a Mitt Romney administration wouldn't scare you any more than a second Obama administration?
Exactly. Hmm. And at least there would be a fight and a debate, and we would have the opportunity to stay his hand and to build the opposition under a Republican. Now, you know, that's not to say that there are no differences or that I think, you know, that it would be preferable. You know, in my mind, it's kind of a toss-up, but that what would really benefit is that we would gain our voice back. You know, to my mind, our campaign represents that voice, and what happens around it is not nearly as important as the fact that we revitalize our democracy, which is on life support.
I'm speaking with Dr. Jill Stein, who is running for president on the Green Party ticket. This is Progressive Radio that you're listening to, and I'm Matt Rothschild. It's funny you used a medical metaphor there. You're a doc. What kind of doctor are you?
Right now, I'm a doctor of political medicine.
But when you were practicing?
I am an internist by training, and I'm still licensed to practice. I haven't practiced for the last few years because it became difficult to do both. But I'm a general doctor for adults, and, you know, it became crystal clear to me, and this is what kind of, you know, got me involved in the world of advocacy and policy, that A, the healthcare system was failing people who most need it, and B, that the environment, broadly speaking, the community drivers of health and disease are enormously important. This is kind of the elephant in the room, and, you know, they are all being, you know, very... they are under attack. The community drivers of health are all under attack. And I became involved in the advocacy world thinking, oh, if only our legislators knew that we could clean up our air and, you know, move to green energy and recycling and all that and not have all this pollution that's making us sick and create a ton of jobs, by the way, while we're at it. It's a win-win. Surely our legislators will go for these cost-saving solutions. And, you know, I had the usual 5-year or so advocacy experience, you know, of learning that that's not what it's about at all. And that was my wake up, that if we want to fix these things, we have to fix the broken political system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it's just not about the facts, it's about the power.
Exactly. And, exactly.
I think Paul Krugman has realized that as the economics writer for the New York Times in the same way. You know, yes. He thought if I could only just tell people, you know, what's actually going on, then rational decisions would be made, but that's not it works.
Exactly.
Now, Obama on health care, I mean, we only have about a minute and a half left, but it wasn't the best proposal for universal health care, but he did a couple good things. I mean, pre-existing conditions, getting that restriction or game that the health insurance companies were playing, getting that out of there certainly was a plus, don't you think?
For sure. There are, you know, likewise in Massachusetts, you know, which the Obama's plan is modeled on, care was extended to some people didn't have it, but the price paid for it is just untenable. And in the same way that Massachusetts is going bankrupt trying to pay for this healthcare system, we will continue to go bankrupt nationally trying to pay for this. And the problem with it is that it distracts us from the real reform that we need to advance, which is basically Medicare for all. We can have comprehensive health care for everyone, which is also affordable and which saves us, in fact, trillions of dollars. So there is a win-win here, but it's not the one that's been put on the table. So it's an unfortunate distraction. And it doesn't really help you when you get sick, unfortunately. I mean, this is what we're finding in Massachusetts, that these insurance policies tend to evaporate. They're still ducking. The private insurance sector should not be in the driver's seat here. They will find ways to continue ducking, you know, people who need health care. You will get dumped. Medical bankruptcies have not been diminished one bit under the current system.
So there's still game in it.
Yeah, they absolutely are.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. My guest today has been Dr. Jill Stein, who's running for president on the Green Party ticket. Thanks so much for being with me.
It's been great being with you. Thanks, Matt.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.